Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guest on Meet the Press will be Julian Bond, who was denied a seat in the Georgia House of Representatives for his criticism of the war in Vietnam. We'll bring you today's program in a moment. Few people realize the extent of kidney disease in the United States today. Yet, more than 100,000 Americans die each year from some form of kidney disease. And at least 3 million others have an undiagnosed infectious disease of the kidneys. Much that is known about kidney disease has been discovered only recently. So your local kidney disease chapter tries to keep both the medical profession and the public informed of these important discoveries. Also, Kidney Foundation chapters support research projects in 26 medical centers and institutions throughout the country. Recent advances, such as the dramatic new uses for the artificial kidney and the technique of transplanting kidneys, now offer hope where formerly there was none. By supporting your local Kidney Foundation, you will increase that hope. Give generously when your neighbor calls on you for a gift. For a free booklet containing information about kidney disease, write to the National Kidney Foundation, Box 353, New York.
This is Frank Blair, your Sunday Night Monitor host. Miss Helen Hayes recently returned from a visit to the Orient and has some caustic comment about the state of the theater there.
Well, I'll tell you something. The overall impression I've had in Korea was that if the theater's a little wobbly in New York City, which I'm told in my letters from home, certainly it's not at all wobbly around the Orient.
We'll be happy to have you in our Sunday Night Monitor audience on NBC Radio.
And now, Meet the Press. Today's guest, Julian Bond. Our panel consists of Tom Wicker of the New York Times, Robert Novak, New York Herald Tribune Syndicate, Carl Rowan, Chicago Daily News, Herbert Kaplow of NBC News, and Robert Gorowski of NBC News, who is our moderator.
We'll have the first question now from Robert Novak of the New York Herald Tribune Syndicate.
Mr. Bond, there have been a great number of explanations of just why the Georgia House of Representatives refused to seat you. In your own words, what is your explanation for this?
Well, I think the people involved in the fight to deny me my seat had different reasons for acting. They charged me with misconduct and questioned my credulity and said that if I took the oath of office, which requires that you swear allegiance to the United States Constitution and the Constitution of the State of Georgia, that I would not be credible. And I could not be believed, and therefore should not be allowed to take the oath.
You don't feel there was any racist overtones to this?
Oh, certainly I do. I don't think that race was the sole factor involved, but
You do think it was a factor?
Yes, I do.
You think a white man taking your position would have been seated?
I don't know if a white man taking my position would have been seated, but I think that my employment with what some people consider a militant civil rights group, my race, the statement itself were all factors involved in the eventual outcome.
Do you feel that your subscribing to the SNCC statement in any way did compromise your loyalty to the United States?
No, not at all.
Well, would you fight for your country under any conditions?
Well, I consider myself a pacifist, if you mean would I bear arms.
Well, would you have borne arms in World War II, for example?
Well, that's sort of a hypothetical question. I don't believe I would.
Then you're not a selective pacifist. There's no conditions under which you would bear arms for your country.
No.
Would you fight to save your family, your household?
Well, that again is another hypothetical situation that, you know, the usual question put to pacifists is what would you do if someone began beating your wife? But no one's beating my wife right now. I think of myself as a pacifist. I believe in nonviolence.
Well, let me ask you a non-hypothetical question. Do you approve of the Deacons for Defense and Justice, which is a Negro group which does bear arms and has had close ties with civil rights groups in the South?
No, I don't approve of anyone, anywhere, under any circumstances, engaging in violence.
When did you become a pacifist, Mr. Bond?
I began thinking about pacifism and about nonviolence in 1957, when I was a student at a Quaker school in Pennsylvania, and since then, And since my involvement in the civil rights movement has become deeper and deeper, the feeling has just increased.
When you first applied for the draft, did you list yourself as a pacifist?
No, I didn't. The Army told me that they weren't interested in my serving with them.
And you did not in any way indicate you were a pacifist at that time?
No, I simply registered.
Why didn't you?
After I took my physical examination, and after I had taken the mental examination, I was given a status of 1Y, which I understand means not to be called except in case of national emergency, and I never believed that my service in the military would be an issue.
We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Robinson.
Mr. Bond, you indicated your position on war in general just a moment ago, that you're a pacifist and you believe in nonviolence. At the same time, when we took it down to the personal level, you indicated that you would make a decision on that when and if it happened. Are you, in a sense, saying you would support those wars that happen to come up if they go along with your ideas and reject those that you do not agree with?
No, what I was trying to indicate is that I don't like to answer questions about hypothetical situations because I don't think anyone really knows how he's going to react in a hypothetical situation. I'm not a selective pacifist. I don't choose this war as over that war. I oppose all wars, and I oppose all violence.
But at the same time, you're indicating that when it came down to your family, you would have to wait until that situation took place, even though you would oppose all wars in the future and in the past.
No, that's not what I thought I was saying. I was trying to indicate that, as far as I'm concerned, I'm a pacifist, whether it concerns my family or a war in Vietnam or a war wherever.
Now, you have been a pacifist for some time. Why didn't you make your position known as a pacifist when you were running for office in Georgia? And why didn't you make your views on Vietnam known during the campaign?
Well, my views on nonviolence were known during the campaign. The question of Vietnam is not a question that the Georgia House of Representatives, the office that I was aspiring to, addresses itself to. I didn't think it was an issue.
Mr. Wicker.
Mr. Bond, aside from your general pacifist views, as a thoughtful and aspiring American Negro, do you feel more personal affinity with other aspiring non-white men in Asia and Africa, perhaps than with the great majority of white Americans?
Well, I feel an emotional attachment toward Africa and toward colored people, but I don't think that colored people are any better or any worse than white people. I don't feel that because colored people are engaging in a struggle against white people, that the colored people must be right.
No, I wasn't suggesting that you were. I was wondering if you felt somehow that across the world, non-white men had a sort of a common struggle against white oppression in some places, white majorities elsewhere, and if these links were beginning to be forged more closely.
Well, I don't want to characterize the oppression as white. It unfortunately is in a great many cases, but I don't think it's that case. I think it's the case that colored people have had, in a great many instances, a common struggle against some sort of oppression.
Would you see, to be specific, would you see any striking similarity between the civil rights struggle in the United States, of which you've been such an active participant, and a revolutionary movement like that of the Viet Cong?
No, I don't see that sort of a similarity. I see a similarity between people. In one case, Negroes in the United States, in other cases, people who live in Vietnam who are struggling. That's one parallel. The other parallel is that Negroes in the United States are struggling against a system of segregation and discrimination and oppression. And the same sort of parallel has been suggested, not by me, as going on in Vietnam today.
Mr. Kaplow.
Well, Mr. Bond, to follow up with what you just said about an affinity of people who are struggling, what about, do you feel that maybe one of the targets of the struggling in Vietnam not only is what is characterized in this document which you endorsed and which started this whole thing from SNCC, not only the United States but also the communist side? Would you feel that they were also, people were struggling against them?
Well, the feeling I have is that people who live in Vietnam, North and South, are struggling to determine their own destiny in some way or another. The impression I get is that they'd like very much to be left alone, not only by the United States, but by the Viet Cong as well.
Well, this document, again, which started all this, which was put out by SNCC, only condemns the United States. It doesn't condemn the the North Vietnamese or the Viet Cong or any other groups, or the Red Chinese?
Right. Well, I will condemn them here, but my position in endorsing this document, and I believe the position of those who drafted it, was that we are, after all, Americans who live in this country, and I feel a much greater responsibility toward criticizing or praising the actions of this country than I do toward praising or criticizing the actions of another.
Well, if you make your point that the common bond is struggling peoples, and it doesn't make any difference who is against them, you're against all those who might be oppressing them, whether it's an American or a Red Chinese or,
right,
or North
exactly
Vietnam.
So.
Now, let me ask you, how else do you equate civil rights with the Vietnam? A lot of the other civil rights groups, for instance, the head of the Atlanta chapter of NAACP, says there you shouldn't equate the two.
Well, I equate it in that I think the opposition to the war in Vietnam in this country among a great many people is moral opposition. That it's not political opposition. It's opposition of people who feel that war is wrong. It's opposition of people who feel that that particular war is wrong on a moral ground. And I think that's the same sort of opposition that the civil rights movement has been engaged in against segregation. It's been moral opposition to segregation as well as political and physical opposition to segregation.
Well, again, referring back to this document, which is sort of becoming, I guess, the Bible for my questioning anyway, but you say the United States, in effect, has not done enough or moved quickly enough on civil rights, and you mentioned a couple of laws. You don't feel that legislation in 57, and I think 61, and 64, and 65, and a whole string of court rulings all favoring desegregation marks progress against desegregation, against segregation?
No, the document doesn't say that there hasn't been progress. It does say that there has not been, in our opinion, enough progress.
Well, I think that it's stronger than that. I can't read it here now, but I think it implies that the United States has fallen short of carrying out its commitment. Is that fair?
Yes, that's fair. That's my belief.
Mr. Bond, I'm wondering what you and your friends see as the central issue here in your difficulties with the legislature. Is it perhaps the right to dissent?
Well, I think it's two important issues, and the first is certainly the right to free speech, the right to dissent, the right to voice an opinion that may be unpopular. But I think a second and equally as important issue is the right of people, in this case my constituents, to be represented by someone they chose, by their right to make a free choice and a free election to choose someone to represent them. And I think in this instance, the Georgia House of Representatives has denied them that right.
How many of your constituents feel the same way you do about Vietnam, you know?
Well, since this became an issue, I tried to talk with as many as I could. And I've got 20, or I had, I guess I should say, 25,000 constituents, men, women, and children, about 6,000 registered voters. And in 3 days, I must have talked to not very many people, about 200 or 250 at the most. And their opinions generally were in agreement with this statement and in agreement with my right to express myself on any issue that I saw. In fact, I might say that some of them, I don't like to use this word, but some of them had opinions about the war in Vietnam that were more extreme than this document.
But you think most of the 6,000 would support this statement?
I don't know if they would or not. I know that all of those that I talked to did.
Mr. Novak.
Mr. Bond, I would like to get into some of the wording of this statement because it's interesting that you mentioned that there could be a position a little more extreme. For example, it says, "We maintain that our country's crusade to preserve freedom in the world is a hypocritical mask behind which it squashes liberation movements," unquote. What is a liberation movement?
Well, I think that I'd have to agree with Senator Young, I think it was, who said that the struggle in Vietnam was a civil war.
Well, is Viet Cong a liberation movement, Mr. Bond?
I don't know what the Viet Cong are. I have the impression that they are not what I'd call a liberation movement.
Well, what liberation movements are we squashing, according to the SNCC statement?
According to this statement, and according to my beliefs, the liberation movement that's being squashed in that particular instance is the struggle of people who live in North and South Vietnam and who want self-determination, who want to rule themselves.
Well, you mean the Viet Cong that we're fighting in Vietnam? Are we fighting somebody else than the Viet Cong?
Well, there are a lot of differences of opinion about who is fighting and whether it's infiltrators from the North or whether it's citizens of the South, whether it's a civil war.
You don't think it's a communist-led operation, the Viet Cong?
I don't know if it is.
Well, you've made several statements about Vietnam, Mr. Bond. Have you made any study of the subject?
I've tried to learn as much about it.
And you don't know whether the Viet Cong is a communist movement or not?
No, all the information that I get is that it is. What I'm trying to say, if you give me a second, is that by a liberation movement, I mean, and I take this statement to mean, the legitimate aspirations of the people who live in North and South Vietnam, who it seemed to me want only to determine their own destiny.
Well, in the communist parlance, isn't the liberation movement part of the terminology of war as a liberation, which have been proclaimed by Pei Ping?
Well, that may be their analysis of that term. It's not mine.
I just want to ask you another thing in this statement. We believe the U.S. government has been deceptive in its claim of concern for the freedom of the Vietnamese people, just as the government has been deceptive in claiming concern for the freedom of colored people. Do you think the United States government has been deceptive in claiming freedom for colored people in the United States, in claiming concern for freedom?
Concern?
I'm quoting from the SNCC statement. The government has been deceptive in claiming concern for the freedom of colored people.
Right, I do. I don't think, as I said a few minutes ago, that the government of this country has done as much as it might, has gone as far as it might.
But that's deceptive?
In my opinion, it is.
They have sought to deceive the people on their concern for the colored people, then, you feel?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Robinson.
Mr. Bond, you indicated that you had not counseled the burning of draft cards, and you also said you wouldn't burn yours. Do I take it from this statement you're saying that you did not counsel individuals in this country to avoid the draft?
No, what this statement says and what I have said is that young American men who are unwilling to go into the army, to enter into military service, should seek legal alternatives to the draft, to military service. And in addition, we are suggesting in this statement that those alternatives be enlarged to include work in the civil rights movement or work with human relations organizations.
But you're asking that they go outside of this present area?
No, we're asking. This was a public statement thrown out to the public, and on last weekend I met with congressmen here and asked them the same sort of thing. We're asking that draft boards or the Congress or whoever's the determiner make it possible for young men who are unwilling to go into the Army have legal and valid alternatives to that service.
Well, in your statement, you said we are in sympathy, or in SNCC's statement, we are in sympathy with and support the men in this country who are unwilling to respond to a military draft which would compel them to contribute their lives to the United States aggression in Vietnam. And another point, you urged all Americans to seek an alternative. Now, in effect, aren't you encouraging individuals throughout the country to avoid the draft?
Well, I think that if you take the statement as a whole and not section by section, that it says, we believe that work in the civil rights movement and other human relations organizations is a valid alternative to the draft. We urge all Americans to seek this alternative.
One more?
Just one more thing. You indicated that you admired those individuals who burned their draft cards, yet you said you wouldn't burn yours. Why wouldn't you?
Well, let me say what I said first. I said I admired the courage of people who burned their draft cards because I understand, I think, why they do it. And I admire them for doing it, knowing that they face very heavy penalties, 5 years in jail, a fine of $5,000, and if they're in a public office, they might be expelled. I wouldn't burn mine because it's against the law to burn mine.
Mr. Wicker.
Do you think there's any likelihood that the organized Negro movement in America, the several organizations like your own, will become an allied and integral part of the so-called peace movement opposing the Vietnamese War?
Well, if you mean allied and integral part, that we're about to stop the work that we're engaging in now and become a peace organization as opposed to a civil rights organization, no. I do think that what's going to happen is that more and more members of the individual organizations that make up the civil rights movement, and perhaps more organizations, are going to take an issue, are going to take a public stand on peace, on war, and probably on the war in Vietnam.
You feel, in short, that the civil rights movement as such is becoming, will be devoting a larger share of its attention than it has to issues like that in Vietnam, the current issue in Vietnam.
Right, but I don't by any means mean to suggest that we're about to drop the things that we're doing now.
Would you think that an escalation of the war in any sense, that is, if the war becomes a much hotter war, a great deal more fighting, would you think that this would accelerate this trend that you now see?
I think so. People in the civil rights movement are worried about the cost of that war, for one thing, and what the cost of that war is going to mean to the war on poverty in this country, what it's going to mean to social services in this country. And I think that they're concerned about it, and any escalation, I think, will increase the concern of people here.
Well, looked at in terms of American politics, if this happens, does it seem to you that long continuation of the war and perhaps a step up of the level of the war, would this trend be likely to drive members of the Negro organizations not only into the peace movement, but out of the Democratic Party, which after all is responsible for the war?
Well, I like to think I'm in the Democratic Party. I ran as a Democrat. And I don't think it will have that effect. I don't think that people in the civil rights movement, as I said before, are going to just drop their other work. But I do think that there's going to be increasing participation by people in the civil rights movement in anti-war movements.
Mr. Kaplow.
Could you not conceive then, Mr. Bond, that possibly by becoming active in something else that you might dilute the impact of your primary purpose, which was desegregation?
I can see that, but I don't think it will happen. That's the argument that people have argued against my taking a stand and against SNCC taking a stand and against other people in the civil rights movement who've taken a stand.
Well, of the major civil rights organizations, the major half dozen or so, isn't SNCC the only one that has done that? And many of the leaders, and with respect to your case, say that, yes, you should have been seated, but they disagree with your position on Vietnam and they don't think it should have become an issue.
Right. A great many people have said that. It's true. SNCC is, I believe, the only organization that has taken a public stand on the war in Vietnam. Dr. Martin Luther King has taken a public stand opposing the war in Vietnam. James Farmer, when he was executive secretary of Corps, took a position as a private citizen, he said, against the war in Vietnam.
I would like to go a little bit more into this business of SNCC as a civil rights group. You sort of put the word militant in quotes a few minutes ago when you talked about that adjective for SNCC. Jim Foreman, who is one of your associates in SNCC, is quoted as calling 9 other Negro legislators in the Georgia legislature Uncle Toms. Do you know what he meant by that or what he was thinking, and do you agree?
No, I don't agree. That the other nine...
Did he say that, Negroes, as far as you know?
I read it in the paper.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't there when he was supposed to have said it. If I assume that he did. I don't agree with that character.
What do you think about it?
About the other nine Negroes in the Georgia House? Some of them are friends of mine. Some of them I don't know too well. Most of them made some effort in behalf of my being seated, and I'm very appreciative of it.
Well, do you feel that they are not making strong enough efforts for desegregation?
No. I don't expect everyone in the country to run around...
Well, do you mean no, they are not making, or yes?
No, I mean, no, I... Oh, maybe you'd better ask me that again.
Well, do you feel that they are making strong enough efforts for desegregation?
Yes, I do.
We have 2 minutes left, gentlemen. And Mr. Bond, you're out of the legislature now. What are your plans for getting back in?
Well, I've filed a suit with 2 of my constituents, a woman named Mrs. Keyes and Dr. Martin Luther King, against the House of Representatives of the state of Georgia, which will probably be decided sometime in the next 3 weeks. I'm also an announced candidate, but not a qualified candidate, for a special election that comes up on February 23rd to fill the vacancy created when my seat was emptied. And beyond that, those are the only things I'm doing.
Do you plan to take this all the way to the Supreme Court, if necessary?
Well, if we don't get relief from the 3-judge federal panel, the next step is the Supreme Court, and we will go there.
Mr. Novak.
Mr. Bond, your organization, SNCC, is trying to build an all-black political organization in central Alabama which will run under the symbol of the Black Panther. Do you feel that at the time when the Democratic Party, the White Democratic Party of Alabama, has dropped the white supremacy slogan and is trying to provide an entry for Negroes, this is intelligent politics?
Well, it's not for me to say. I think it is, but I think the decision in this case rests with those particular people who
live
in Lowndes County. They're interested in getting some of the benefits from their city and county government, and they see as one of the means of getting them by electing their representatives to post in that government. They don't intend by any means to take over, but they are going to run, I think, 4 candidates in the upcoming primary.
Less than a minute, Herb Kaplow.
Well, Mr. Bond, what would you expect the white man, the white leadership, to do to fulfill what you conceive to be his obligation to the Negro and equality?
Oh, well, I don't...
Now, what more?
I don't know if we have enough time for that, but generally, I think Negroes in this country want the things that white people have as a matter of course. The right to a decent living, the right to...
Aren't efforts being made to promote that now by the white leadership of this country?
Certainly they are.
What are the prospects, as you now see them, Mr. Bond, for Negroes remaining for the foreseeable future within
the established
two-party system?
Sorry, time's up. We'll save that for the next time. Thank you, Mr. Bond, for being with us today on Meet the Press.
Thank you, Robert Garowski. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press interview. How many people are presidents of a business when they are only 16 or 17 years old? Not many, that's for sure. But here are 80,000. They are presidents of 4,500 junior achievement companies, real businesses on a small scale, organized and run by teenagers with the guidance of volunteer adult advisors from business and industry. You can see these businesses in operation at any junior achievement center. Support J.A.
This is Stan Musial. Here's a timely reminder from the Internal Revenue Service. Begin work on your income tax return now. Postponing the job to the last minute can cause costly mistakes. Start by collecting your records of all income received. In January, employers sent out withholding statements on income tax withheld last year. Check the amounts you received in dividends and interest, as well as the amounts you were paid for jobs or services. All income received, unless specifically tax-exempt, must be reported on your return. Collect your records on deductible expenses and contributions, such as last year's doctor bills, donations to charity, and interest paid on loans and mortgages. With a good income and expense record, you will be able to file an accurate return. So begin early. Begin now. Avoid that last-minute rush.
Now, more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was Julian Bond. On the panel were Tom Wicker, New York Times, Robert Novak, New York Herald Tribune Syndicate, Carl Rowan, Chicago Daily News, and Herbert Kaplow, NBC News. For a printed copy of Meet the Press, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped, self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C. That's Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C. Meet the Press will be heard again next week when our guests will be the presidents of the two major business associations, Robert P. Gerholtz of the Chamber of Commerce and W.P. Dullender of the National Association of Manufacturers. You read about it, or it happens to someone you know. Good workmen with years of experience are let go because a new... machine will do their work and do it better. How about you? You won't get tomorrow's jobs with yesterday's skills. To get one of tomorrow's better-paying jobs, begin retraining, learning a new skill now. For information, the U.S. Department of Labor urges you to visit the local office of your state employment service soon.
This is David Brinkley. Join me each weekday afternoon for my special NBC Radio Report.